In this episode, we discuss the film that doesn't even try for the bronze. I Am Number 4. Everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot Kalin.
I thought I'd get a little more extravagant with my introduction there.
Yeah, did I noticed. You barely.
Pick it up a notch.
Barely. I think you kept
a little more energy.
It up 1/17th of a notch.
Well,
I'm kind of a mess right now, so I didn't really notice.
Yeah, Stuart's been through a lot. He found out that he was from another planet. His hands got all glowy. He had to fight some aliens.
I did that, didn't I? And my father figure died and turned into dust.
Turned into dust. He had to go to high school, get beat up by the bully.
Yeah.
Wow, I can't
believe
that.
Why would I do that?
I don't know.
Why would I fight those aliens?
Well, because they were after you.
Oh, okay. So it was like a self-defense? Or
yes. Well, and you were saving the Earth from aliens. Well,
I'm amazed that you were jumping straight into the meat of this podcast.
Well, what are we going to do?
Well, normally we waste our time a little bit.
We can waste some time.
Is it because...
So, Dan, what's that enchanting scent you're wearing?
Sweat. So, I mean, is it because we were featured in the Onion AV Club? Do you feel a little more pressure to be professional?
We've had an episode up since then.
Yeah, but this is the first time we've taped since we saw the review.
What are you talking about?
We had one on the can.
Stuart, I think you're familiar with this review.
What are you talking about?
Because of what it said about you, which was, in two words...
I do have to say, listeners at home, I was looking at the internet the other day, and...
Wait, so you're going to just pretend that you didn't know what we were talking about and then go into and then talk about it like you found it?
Yeah, I'm like a bashful guy. humble.
We'll explain. So you're looking at the internet.
I was looking at the internet, and I have
a... You're like, one internet,
review.
Please.
Yep. I was looking at a little review of podcasts, and just so happened that our podcast, The Flophouse, was reviewed, and I think my favorite part was, and I quote, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, equally funny Stuart Wellington. That's me.
True. Mm-hmm. Stuart was described as equally funny to me and Dan.
So I did it.
Stuart did it.
I did it, guys.
I'm just happy he's taking that as a compliment rather than an insult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like it's not really a... It's not so much a judgment, a value judgment, as just like...
It's a begrudging admission.
You guys don't understand. You guys are professional comedy writers.
Well,
barely.
Dan is kind of like an apprentice professional comedy writer.
Yeah. So you're like a Sorcerer's Apprentice of...
I'm the Jay Baruchel of the Daily
So
Show.
There's like a prophecy.
Very accurate, yeah.
There's a prophecy that you're someday going to be the best comedy writer of all time. And Elliot's kind of schooling you, but he's kind of a dick about it.
That part is true, yes. Yeah, that part's very accurate. Yeah, we were reviewed in the AV Club for The Onion, and they were very flattering. It was an honor.
If you haven't seen it already, which is unlikely because most of you probably arrived here through that.
I could have used more photos.
Because
there are no photos of us, unfortunately. I know there's one on the website of you in a jaunty hat, Stuart.
Sure.
And of Dan probably dancing.
Wait, on the AV Club?
No, on the Flophouse website.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
On the AV Club website, our review was illustrated with a picture of Zach Galifianakis eating a piece of watermelon.
For a second, I thought he was going to be on our podcast. That'd be awesome.
The part I was proudest of was that my quote was on the top of the notable quotes for the week.
That was a good quote.
Yeah.
I laughed when I read it, even though I'd already heard it. Yeah.
I laughed when I read our review because it did such a good job of describing the normal bullshit that we do on this show.
Right.
But not sounding irritated at it.
No. Sounding like it was entertaining, but mentioning like...
Unlike many of the vocal reviews I've heard from people.
Sure. Well, those are our friends. They feel like they can be real dicks to us.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're my listeners, they're not really my friends.
Wow.
I need to keep a distance.
You really put yourself above them.
Well, I'm the artist, and they appreciate what I do.
He's on-air talent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, now that we've bullshitted about ourselves for a while, we can talk about the movie.
Yeah, which we never do. We're mysterious. That's how they know the kind of food I like. What the names of our insignificant others are.
Yeah.
And that your insignificant other... Wait.
Insignificant other?
She doesn't listen to the podcast. That's where you're going with it.
Yeah, that was a burn.
So you can call her insignificant.
Yeah.
Well, she's not insignificant, and we will have words after this recording, gentlemen. But yeah, she doesn't listen to this, so.
I mean, in height, maybe.
She's the same height as me.
Whoa.
She's not taller than me.
Well, if I was making a basketball team, I would probably pick her first.
Whoa. I'll have you know she is very, very slow.
Well, that's. I mean, she might be able to. But can she shoot? Does she have hand-eye coordination?
Yeah, she's
very good. How is she from the outside? She good?
Is that something?
Is that
important for basketball?
Because she's beautiful. If that's what you're asking, how does she look on the outside?
No, I meant can she hit a shot from the outside
of what?
Of the court.
Wait, are you talking about photography again?
Yeah. What do you? I don't know what this is.
Because that's what happened in this movie. There's that girl who's way into photography.
Let's get into the movie, shall we?
Well, we're talking about us.
There's this movie called I'm Number 4.
Was that a good enough digression for you, by the way, Dan?
That was fine.
Okay.
It wasn't one of our top digressions, but I'll take it.
Well, where would you rank it? Like 37?
Yeah.
38?
Probably.
Number 4, perhaps?
No, wait. Number 4 is probably Chopin Godables. Yeah. The cereal.
Porthole of Time is number 1.
Porthole of Time was...
Porthole of Time is number 1. Teddy Grahams is number 2.
Teddy Grahams, I forgot about. That's right. Well, for anyone who's a new listener, these are a couple of our Flophouse favorites. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what episode Porthole of Time was in?
Oh, God, I don't know.
It's on the internet.
Go back and listen to every episode. You got a lot of good ones, such as Porthole of Time, which is a monologue I did about based off of Dan barely mispronouncing the title Beastmaster 2 Porthole of Time. Through the Portal of Time, where it was the steward of a ship explaining – of a cruise ship, the purser, I think, explaining to some guests why they should stay away from the porthole in their room. Teddy Grahams was, of course, about the – in World War II when women's husband would be killed in war and the government would deliver a Teddy Graham notifying them of this.
I don't even understand. I don't know where Chopin Godables came
Chopin
from.
We just started saying potables and like something notables. And Chopin Godables was.
It was a cereal, breakfast cereal.
It was a breakfast cereal. Will Hines was with us for that one. But a breakfast cereal that I guess Chopin endorsed or invented that was Godable. I don't understand it myself.
All right.
Anyways, well, those are some of our top digressions.
Now that we've taken a. Trip down memory lane. We can get into tonight's
movie. Final judgments.
No. Sure. You're skipping way ahead. No. We got to talk about
this movie. I recommend a little movie called Castle Freak. Said a freak that lives in a castle.
What am I going to recommend now, Nick?
Invisible Maniac.
He castle freaks your head there. There's a mind freak on Elliot's part.
So that was a lot of good inside jokes for the people who are coming to us for the first time off of the AV Club.
Yeah.
Hope that intrigued you.
That's how we build an audience.
But the movie we watched today was a little thing called Yo Soy Número Cuatro, or for the gringos, I Am Number 4.
Thanks.
It starred Alex Pettifer, I think was his name.
What?
Which is not a name.
He's from Hertfordshire, England. Okay, and you could tell it because he had a terrible American accent.
His American accent would often slip into a vaguely English accent. Here's my question.
Is that a sound effect from the movie we just watched?
No, that was your phone.
Oh, okay.
Here's my question. Mm-hmm. What happened to the names of young actors? Pettifer, Gajandit? Meister,
Zane,
the Leister.
I mean,
Zane is not a young actor.
You did point out to me, and you might be right that Gajandit may be a French name. It could be Gajandé. Yeah, is slightly less crazy.
Are we complaining that people have dumb names nowadays?
Yes, that's exactly
this
what
is the Andy Rooney cast
when actors had names like Kirk Douglas mm-hmm. or like Clark Gable,
Rock Hudson.
Rock Hudson. Well, Rock Hudson is a dumb name. But I assume his name was originally Hudson Rock.
Yeah.
That's what the movie Hudson Hawk is based on. That's why Bruce Willis' character dies of AIDS.
Normal names like Humphrey Bogart and Cary Grant.
They had stupid names, but that's the thing. It's Humphrey Bogart sounds like a tough name, but Humphrey is possibly the least tough name for men next to Cam.
Yeah.
Or Gidget.
So anyway, this
actor
this,
had
this
a
tough
stupid
Pettifer.
Name.
So, okay. We are introduced to Alex Pettifer and Timothy Oliphant.
After we see a kid get stabbed.
Oh, I forgot about that. It opens in a jungle somewhere, and these two guys are in a cabin, a
it
kid,
opens
another guy.
Outside the planet Earth.
It opens like the seventh season of Buffy with random kids being stabbed, and then you realize that they're super powered.
It's Spoiler.
Yeah.
I've never seen that, so right. Thanks.
What's Buffy?
The internet will tell you, Stuart.
Okay, but seriously.
That's that the TV internet. Show that they, it was a non-porn parody of that porn Buffy the Vampire Lair.
Yep, sure.
The, so anyway, we open outside of Earth. We zoom in to a jungle. There's a kid in a cabin with a grown man. Why, what are they doing? We don't know. But the grown man has a stone
dagger
with a kind of glowy orb on the back of it.
Probably
suddenly,
from outer space.
A monster comes along, kills the guy, chases the kid. The kid can do all sorts of crazy flips and gymnast stunts. As Dan mentioned, we were watching it. It was like Jeff Goldblum's daughter in The Lost World, Jurassic Park 2. The monster fails to kill him, but then aliens come, or some kind of crazy-looking guys, they're aliens, come and they stab the kid.
Mumble something and stab him, right?
Yeah, they're like...
And take his charm necklace.
They take his charm necklace and stab him, and he turns into stone and then bursts into dust. Then the title, I Am Number 4.
It's like a bad vampire dying effect from,
Aforementioned Buffy.
Yeah, sure.
There we go.
Yeah. I'm not saying there was perfect, guys.
Buffy the Vampire Pair.
Okay.
She was worked in accounting for the vampire company.
People would bring in their blood invoices and pay it out. Yeah.
She'd say, fill out this paperwork. There you go. Here you are. Sorry, we're going to have to deduct the cost of the bag.
not an entertaining show. They were really scraping the bottom of the barrel of the vampire.
It had its moments.
Well, I mean, it addresses like she's this young girl in the big city and has to, I don't know.
She's got a dream of working at a...
vampires or something.
She has a dream of working at a vampire fashion magazine, but she has to get a job in vampire accounting.
And then in the third season, she cut her hair.
Yeah.
It's still better than Buffy the Vampire Bayer. About a woman who works at the Bayer Labs.
We're still doing this.
Just making aspirin for vampires.
It's still going on. There's more.
Okay, so then we meet the hero of our film. He is a young guy, blonde, really buff.
Like a real everyman.
We're introduced to him while riding a jet ski so hard that he flips it around in the air and then lands again. But then, as a girl is coming on to
hear
him.
His story.
As a girl is coming on to him in a late night beach rendezvous, his hands and thigh get his calf get all glowy, and he's like, I can't control it, what's happening? There's glow coming out of my hands. Mm-hmm. And then the next day Timothy Oliphant is like, we gotta go. And it turns out this kid
burn it to the ground.
This kid is an alien, and Timothy Oliphant is his alien warrior bodyguard. And the two of them are on the run from bad aliens who are trying to kill all of the good aliens. And the good aliens are kids who have superpowers.
Yeah.
And are indistinguishable from humans.
And the bad aliens...
Except for their magic powers.
Except for their glowy hands and magic powers.
The bad aliens have tattooed heads and gills, and they have a name that, when shortened, kind of sounds like monk, which I think is on purpose because they wear, robes around.
Well, they wear, dusters.
Yeah.
I mean, they look like they stepped out of it. They look like... It's like, give me a little bit of Alien Nation. Okay, now a little bit of Matrix. Now a little bit of...
A little bit of Road Warrior.
A little bit of Road Warrior, a little bit of Blade 2. Okay, we got our villains. But they're called Mogadorians, was that it?
Something like that.
But it's just a bunch of fucking syllables.
It was a bunch...
They're like Star Trek aliens, right?
Basically. In that they're just their heads are different and everything else is the same.
Yeah. And they're a little bit stronger.
They go to... So Timothy Oliphant...
Like Star Trek aliens.
Yeah.
Timothy Oliphant's like, there's a video of you with your glowy hands on the internet now. We gotta leave. And they drive from, I guess, Florida to...
Yeah, I think they're on the Keys.
Yeah. Francis Scott Keys.
Sure.
Those the Elisa Keys.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And for the young audience.
Sure.
And they go to, what, Ohio?
Paradise,
a town
Ohio.
Called Paradise, Ohio, which is ironic because it's raining.
Oh, that's why.
I guess that would be paradise for someone who likes to be moist, though. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like a frog.
Yes, frog
like
paradise.
A battle toad.
Yeah, like a battle toad.
A lot of talk of battle toads.
Yeah, we talked a lot about battle toads before the movie.
I mean, we said the name. We didn't really talk about it.
We didn't discuss how hard that speeder level was.
Yeah,
because
you
keep running into things.
Yeah, that's to counteract your Alicia Keys reference.
Yeah, something
the really topical.
In the audience.
Battle toads.
Battle toads. They go to Ohio, and Timothy Oliphant's like, we're going to live in this foreclosed house, but you've got to stay invisible. No one can see you. And he's like, screw that, I'm going to school. And because...
Like most teenagers.
Like most teenagers, he loves going to school, wants to go to school all the time. He goes to school, and he bluffs his way into being a student at this school. And long story short, he becomes friends with the nerd. He falls in love with the pretty girl. It's he's basically the
pretty
James,
girl who's kind of like
who's kind of artsy.
Yep.
She takes photographs and wears hats.
The jocks don't like him, do they?
The jocks don't like him because one of the jocks used to go out with the photographer girl
before she became a artsy
Artie.
Person. Yeah.
She's played by Diana Agron.
Who's that?
She's from the television program Glee.
And what would we know her from?
Yeah,
nothing.
Okay.
That is a popular program, but not among the Flophouse demographic.
Nope.
Sure, which we watch primarily pornos, I guess.
Yep, I mean, that's right. I think the only shows we watch are like Life on Top and Lingerie. And
Big Sausage Pizza, which I've already addressed.
Which is not a TV show, but a series of web videos.
I mean, that's the way.
It's
like
a web series.
That's like saying
it's really a web series,
it's like saying your
Elliot.
Favorite show is Brazzers.
Well, that's
all
I
those
mean,
shows should join the guild.
That's probably shot in Los Angeles. But okay. If you write for Big Sausage Pizza or any of the or sure. Bang Bus,
I'd like to meet them first of all.
The Writers Guild East is really looking to get into new media, really trying to cover more people writing for the internet. So if you're a writer and you're feeling exploited, please contact the Writers Guild of America East. No judgments.
Yeah,
we make no judgments.
So
he goes to this school. It's a basic Rebel Without a Cause setup where you've got the alienated young guy and his girlfriend who used to be a popular girl and his friend who's a nerd that people make fun of.
The Salmoneo character.
The Salmonella character. Sure. And basically there's a whole bunch of nonsense where they're teenagers and they're hanging out and they get into fights and blah, blah, blah. And then the aliens come by and they kill Timothy Oliphant.
Come by. They drop by the house. Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, it's like warrior bodyguard gets killed. And
it's the saddest
part. He has that moment of like the father figure dying.
Yeah, this happens about an hour and 10 minutes into the movie.
Significantly too far.
No, it's a basic.
A lot of the characters just hanging around the high school, mumbling to each other and acting like what they're doing is interesting.
He finds out he has magic hands.
This is your basic template. This is Harry Potter by way of Twilight by way of Star Wars. Is what
little Spider-Man throw in there.
Little Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. Little Spider-Man.
Yep.
And yeah, his powers are that he has glow. He has telekinetic powers, basically. But
sure.
His hands are also all glowy, and he has super strength, and it can flip around.
Elliot took to calling him Glowy Hands in the movie.
That's a superhero name.
Yeah,
Glowy Hands.
Yeah, I mean, you should. I mean, that's like a Marvel character, right?
It should be.
Yeah.
Well, for most of the movie, he's just using his glowy hands like flashlights.
He just uses them
to
illuminate.
Like, oh, it's dark in here. I got to use my glowy hands.
This time,
it's actually not that dark, dude. What? You're just showing off at this point.
But that's his catchphrases. Now's glowy hands time to shine. And it should be.
I mean,
it's
a little
out,
complicated.
He walks out. There's nobody else there. His catchphrase can be as long as he wants. It's just him wandering around empty rooms.
Yeah, but I mean, that's not going to catch on. Like, I couldn't see somebody wearing a t-shirt that says that.
Well, what kind
He'll
of
take up the whole shirt.
how about flame on?
No, that's on taken. Guys?
I think that's
shine
taken.
On.
Shine on?
Shine on, you crazy diamond. Yeah,
okay, we got it.
That's his
we
catchphrase.
Got it. Guys, I am number 4, too.
What about...
Wait, that's confusing.
His catchphrase would be, let there be light, and light pours out of his palms.
Okay. No, I mean, these are all better than your first suggestion.
I thought, now's glowy hands time to shine, I thought was a pretty good catchphrase. And he says his name, that takes up some time.
Yeah, I mean.
But he has to introduce himself.
And it reintroduces the IP,
well,
you know.
Well, because his costume has a big GH on the front, but people don't know what that stands for.
Yeah.
They think it's for General Hospital.
Yes.
He's a big fan.
I mean, I'd assume.
So, yeah, but no, he literally just uses his hands as flashlights for most of the film.
He blinds a guy with them, right?
Well, he beats up a lot of people and hurts them badly. But he, there's a kid who's fighting him who has night vision goggles on, and he puts his glowy
hands.
That's
like the perfect prey for a glowy hands.
Exactly.
That's the sweet spot.
That's right in there.
You discovered my one weakness, bright lights.
And he puts his glowy hands up against the guy's face, and the guy's like, ah!
I can't close
it's
my
like,
eyes.
That's what the dialogue is like.
For some reason.
Ah! He's a perfect target. He's like Minka Kelly's character in The Roommate for a roofie enthusiast.
Yeah, because she'll just put anything in her mouth and swallow it down. No questions asked.
But at the end of the movie, number 6 shows up.
Number 6. Throughout the movie, you've occasionally seen this mysterious girl blowing up stuff or tracking down number 4.
I think she must be a bad guy.
Because she's got leather pants and she's like walks away from an explosion real slow early on.
That's a role for Nicolas Cage, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but it turns out to be a different person.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not.
Except for here, they got an attractive young girl instead of Nicolas Cage.
Too tiny. Sure. She's too petite. Yeah.
She was apparently the love interest in Sorcerer's Apprentice. I looked her up on the internet,
which we just saw recently. But yeah. I didn't recognize her. I didn't know.
Well, she had her. She's apparently Australian, and she has a more convincing American accent than our lead.
But she also just becomes the character when she's playing it.
Well, she puts on leather pants.
I really believe she was number six, who's basically.
You really believe she was wearing leather pants?
Oh, and also, there's a lizard that turns into a dog and becomes number four's pet dog, and at the end, he's a big monster who fights evil monsters.
Yeah.
This is the kind of movie.
He's a chimera who's been the bodyguard.
This is the kind of movie where. The movie where the problem could have been solved much earlier if the cool characters had just shown up and beaten up the bad guys. Mm-hmm. But the movie instead has all this crap about the high school and Timothy Oliphant and number four.
Yeah,
and
you're
blah,
wondering
blah,
why you're not watching a show about the cool characters instead of.
Yeah. And then at the end, number six comes in and is way more badass than number four. Mm-hmm. And more likable, frankly. I didn't really like the character.
I mean, I couldn't really
more.
Understand what she was saying, but the other guy just mumbled the whole time.
The main guy was
it's a
not
movie that's
charismatic.
Trying to kill its screenplay.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a muscly, like, dour, like,
I
young
mean, he
guy.
Is,
so I'm sure
I
for, like, shake. Young ladies.
He is, as you said, he's super cut.
I'm sure
he's shredded like lettuce.
He's catnip to the tween girls, I'm sure.
I guarantee you they cast this movie by flipping through an Abercrombie catalog.
I
and said, that one, Timothy Oliphant, that one.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just in really good shape. Like, I want to, like, he must do a
you
lot
just
of cardio.
You want to rub your hands over and just, like, feel the ripples.
Well, kind of, yeah. I mean, it's like a work of art.
It's like ruffles have ridges. And so does this guy.
Yeah, just the, he has tiny ridges all over his body. Just like ruffles.
Wait, is that one of his powers? Or?
Yes. He's ridgy. Okay. They call him Ruffles. Glowy hands Ruffles.
I don't know why I am.
Hello, Ruffles Glowy Hands at your service.
Gentleman thief.
Quickest cat burglar in all of Brighton.
I don't know why it's important for me to clarify this, but like I brought up number six in part to say that the Glowy Hands, this is Glowy Hands' power, weren't just glowiness. It's the he apparently can
He's
charge.
Oh, yeah.
He can use the glowing to charge her powers. Because
her
so,
powers, which are like, she's basically Nightcrawler.
Yeah.
She can dodge around and fast and teleport.
But there's sort of like a symbiotic relationship between the numbers, I guess.
And when we say number six, I don't want you to get your hopes up. It is not Patrick McGoohan's number six from The Prisoner, which would have been awesome.
That would have been awesome.
Anyone who's a Prisoner fan knows Patrick McGoohan is great in the Prisoner, but also the Prisoner character, number six, is a belligerent jerk to everyone he meets, and he cannot control the volume of his own voice. So I wish he had shown up. That would have been great.
Well, he's a human being.
Yeah, not an alien.
Yeah.
And he also died a couple years ago.
Well, not a number.
He is a free man.
That's
the thing.
And, yeah, they couldn't bring, like, a dead body back to put him into the movie. Right?
I don't know. Weekend at Bernie's did it. That guy died during the making of the movie, and they had to change the plot.
Wait, really?
To accommodate it. Oh, yeah.
Like
originally,
in The Crow?
Yes.
Wait, the guy, the Bernie, the dead guy from Bernie
was
actually
dead.
Died.
Not Andrew McCarthy.
Originally.
they didn't make a puppet out of Andrew McCarthy's skin.
That they did.
Oh, okay.
Actually, it was a stuntman wearing it. They couldn't do the computer stuff they did for The Crow.
So they had Kevin McCarthy do all the lines.
They skinned Andrew McCarthy. Yes, and they had Kevin McCarthy from Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Middle-aged actor Kevin McCarthy come in.
Middle-aged?
Well, I mean, at that point he was.
That's
a little charitable.
In his 60s.
Really? Okay. I mean, I guess I'm thinking of him in Twilight Zone the movie, which was still 10 years earlier. So.
But I mean, nowadays, 60s is almost middle age, you know?
That's true. 60 is the new 40. That's true. Sure. And 40 is the new 20, according to Cougartown. But,
Cougarton, Massachusetts.
Wow,
right?
So I'm 15.
Yes. Weekend at Bernie's was originally, and I'm 9 years old. Weekend at Bernie's was originally about, we've got to go to Bernie's. He told me to bring my friend, I thought he meant just my roommate, but he meant my boyfriend. So we've got to pretend we're gay now. But then the guy playing Bernie died, so they changed into where they have to pretend Bernie is.
So it was like a Blake Edwards movie initially.
Yes, exactly. I made it all up. It was originally called Weekend at Hernia's.
Right.
I'm making up for the last guy. Look, it's late, okay? We're talking about I'm number four. And there's a big fight at the end, and the number four wins, and all the other guys win. The good guys win, and then ride off to find the other numbers, the other
you ride off into a sequel that will not happen.
Yes.
Yeah, this is all the opening for a bigger story, right?
Yeah. Well, I
can we talk about the backstory?
That's
of this,
what
which
I
is much more
was
interesting.
Going
than
to
the,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, do you know this? I mean, I know it vaguely. Like James Fry, the guy who did A Million Little Pieces.
Yes.
famously false memoir.
The book that fooled Oprah.
He has his, like, sort of...
it's like a fiction factory.
Factory where, yeah, he barely pays young writers to churn out these books that he thinks might become franchises
or movie ideas, yeah, or things like that. It's very much like a Cowboys and Aliens type thing where they print up a comic just so that they can say that the movie is based on the comic.
To add some credibility to a wacky,
yes,
movie.
So, like, these are books that are designed to become franchise adapted events. Like, they're not meant to be, it's not meant to stand alone on its own as a book.
Or as a good piece of writing.
Yes.
Sure.
But yeah, but James Frey, apparently he pays the writers very little. They're young people just trying to get into writing. And they churn them out, I assume, under pseudonyms, but I'm not sure about that. The same way that, like, the old Shadow or Doc Savage books were all written mostly by the same guy, but not always, but they were written under the same pseudonym, no matter who was writing it.
And
or like how whoever drew Batman for the first 20-some-odd years Batman existed signed the name Bob Kane, even though Bob Kane hadn't touched a pen in decades.
Or how Carl Barks was only known as the Good Duck Artist.
Well, that's the opposite. He was not allowed to sign any name.
Yeah.
Man.
And it's opposite because he was good at what he did. But
this has been Nerd Talk with the Nerd Gang.
This has always been Nerd
too
Talk.
Too bad this bad movie podcast got a little nerdy.
No, but I mean, you know, this is not to say that, you know, good, you know, fun, good art cannot be made under certain genre restrictions.
Oh, no, like, of course it can.
But
I
think
this
explains...
You and I spent a lot of today talking about They Live, you know, so...
But I think that this explains why this movie feels so much like just the most boilerplate version of the story.
Yeah, very rote, very boilerplate by the numbers. It's like we were saying, like a little bit of Harry Potter, a little bit of Spider-Man, a little bit of, you know, what, I don't know, other alien stuff, X-Men, like just throw it all into the pot and do the same story that you've seen 100 times before and get some stupid person to pay $4.99 to watch it on demand on their television to do a bad podcast about it.
Wait,
you just called me stupid.
What I'm saying is, don't just walk to see it.
And,
I mean,
you're saying I shouldn't have sprung the extra dollar to watch it in HD like I did.
Yes. Did you spend another dollar for HD?
Look, I'm a high end videophile, Elliot. I can't.
He didn't spend all this money on his home entertainment system to not watch it in jaw dropping HD.
Yeah. It was jaw dropping. The glowy really came through. Mm-hmm. You could really see the glowy coming out of his hands.
The glowiest. Here's something that I want to say.
So say it.
You're allowed.
We're stopping you.
I have to have a preamble that delays it.
Does this mean that most of the things you say are things you don't want to
say? So many things I say.
For a difference, here's something I want to say.
No, the end of the movie I didn't hate.
There's
like when action started, I thought the action sequence was actually handled pretty well.
The fight at the end, it was a little frantic, but there were some fun things. There was a giant bat monster that fought a giant dog monster.
I like the monster stuff.
The monsters were pretty good. Those were well-designed monsters, frankly.
Yeah.
And they,
which is rare.
And they moved like... monster, like living monsters.
And it wasn't as frantic as a lot of action movies are these days. I mean, there was a little bit more of a sense of what
I could have used slightly more variety between the good monster and the bad monster. But
that's true.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it was...
One of them was like a bad monster, one was like a dog monster.
Yeah, but when they were rolling around like biting each other
and
shit,
they
looked the same.
It was a room, it was in a dimly lit room, I assume, to make the effects look better. They're fighting
I was looking at my phone most of the time.
They're fighting in the shower of a gym locker room. They're fighting at the school.
Sexy.
Like in the opening of Savage Streets?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or the opening of Carrie. Except it's not fighting, it's just the showers.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, they threw tampons at her. That's kind of like fighting.
That's fighting. I mean, yeah, those are
bullying.
Weapons.
Bullying is no joke,
but
guys.
The final climax takes place...
Sure.
Takes
cyberbullying.
Let's stop it for a PSA right now.
Throwing cyber tampons.
What a lot of people don't know is... Dan said some insensitive things about tampon throwing, really got people up in arms, so he has to do a PSA now about it.
I was really pro-tampon throwing in the past, and now I've been shown that it's wrong.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry.
I mean, they don't fly very well. They're not...
They're not aerodynamic.
Like,
well,
yeah,
some have
you
wings.
Throw a ball or something.
Yeah. Or a rock. If you're
just
going to
go,
bully someone, throw a rock.
No,
hey, guys,
people bullying tips.
Guys, just throw a rock. Just throw a ball to somebody. Don't throw a tampon at somebody.
Oh, well, play ball. Just play catch.
I don't even know what's going on anymore.
We've gone down a rabbit hole.
Yeah, I didn't go down with you, though. I'm still on ground level yelling down to the hole, where'd you guys go? Can you come out, please?
Hey. No, you come down here.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, wait, what are we? We're talking about the end of the movie.
The climax of the movie takes place at the high school for some reason. Mm-hmm. Sure. They just destroy it. All the lockers are being thrown around. You got telekinetic powers. You got teleporting powers. School is out for summer and forever. They rip up the football field. The problem is there's not a lot of variety with the bad aliens. They all have these giant guns that look like they came out of the Fifth Element that shoot red lasers. And they just kind of stand around shooting lasers until one of the good guys kills them.
Yeah,
they're not
usually. Usually, the good guys team up and kill one dude.
Yeah, but they build these guys, up, these bad guys, up as if they're super tough and scary. But then they're not really that hard to take down.
Although I do like how kind of goofy they get when we finally meet them. They, you know, like
well, they look stupid.
Well, the movie kind of realized that. Okay, this is a very humorless film, so let's make these aliens kind of...
Thanks in part to the amazing performances by our leads.
Yeah.
Well, I can, yeah, it seemed like they were kind of drugged up most of the
And kind of mad they were in a movie.
And Timothy Oliphant, who I normally love, was pretty boring. I mean, once he... Like,
you love him in that show, Justify Your Love.
Sure.
Ever since he cut it, like...
The show where he plays Madonna?
Mm-hmm. He had that really cool haircut at the beginning of the movie, and then he cut it off, and I think...
That really ruined it for Stewart.
Yeah. You know,
that he cut off his long beach bum hair from the beginning
beach
of the movie.
Mullet. But, you know, when he was fighting, he's good at that stuff.
Yeah.
So that was something.
Not very good, though. The problem is with the villains being, like, jokey is that you see that a lot. Like, the villain, like, likes to play around with the people he's about to kill and make jokes and wisecracks. Mm-hmm. It's been a long time since you saw, like, a solemn villain that was really scary.
Well, right after watching Drive Angry, where the lead is Nicolas Cage and is most stone-faced,
yeah,
and the bad guy in the form of the, like, the devil character is, you know, kind of making jokes and acting funny.
The accountant, you mean?
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
It just feels like the same thing over and over.
Yeah, but not as good.
Well, that was William Fichtner, and these were a bunch of Romulans.
Basically, yeah.
With face gills.
Face gills. And the best, I think my favorite part of the movie is, so they have this giant bat monster that they just truck around. Two giant bat monsters they just truck around the country in a big truck. And they feed it tons and tons of uncooked butterball turkeys. And there's a scene where one of the aliens goes into a grocery store with his hoodie flipped up and just gets a cart full of turkeys, buys them, and then goes and feeds the monster with them.
Presumably with space bucks.
And I just love, like, with space – yeah, he got space bucks from his Astro Bank or you used his space debit card. But I love the idea that these are these super tough aliens, but they still have to buy their groceries at the store. There's a part where they're driving along the road, and they slow down just enough to show their true hideous face to a fat kid in the car next door, like in the other lane. And then they're like, ha-ha, okay, speed up,
like,
now.
I have expected that fat kid to, like, smash his ice cream into his face. He's so scared. Or, like,
or pull out
squeezes soda pop.
Pull out a flask and go, never again, and throw it over his shoulder.
Drunk fat kid.
So maybe I do like the bad guys, actually. Yeah, they have to go to the grocery store to buy turkeys, and they like to slow down enough to scare fat kids.
So Elliot Stance and Dan Stance and Stuart Stance on the bad guys, thumbs up.
Thumbs up. Yeah. Well, everything else, though.
I would rather hang out with the bad guys than anyone else in this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't speak very clear English. But
no,
then,
well, but everyone mumbled in this movie.
Yeah, they, you know.
This was
they were really cool dusters.
Yes.
They liked to party, Stuart.
This was the first...
Oh, that's true.
This was the first mumblecore, big-budget sci-fi movie I think I've ever seen.
Yeah. Not good mixing. So, I don't know.
Final judgments.
Let's get to the final judgments of this movie. Was this a good, bad movie, a bad movie?
Yes.
Or a movie you kind of liked? Elliot says it's a bad, bad movie.
I would say bad, but it was very boring and slow and felt like any one of 1,000 better movies.
Yeah. Stuart?
I'll agree. If it had just been all monster fights, I'd been more interested.
Well, certainly. It's just like how Jonah Hex, the best part of it was that Snake Man that you saw very briefly.
Yeah.
Any movie is better.
If it had been called Snake Man, the story of Snake Man, I would have watched it.
Almost any movie is better with monster fights in it.
Yeah, this is a bad, bad movie, and I'll tell you the main reason why. For the first...
Well, we just said not enough monster fights.
Yeah, for the first two-thirds of the film, they dole out information very slowly, as if you've never seen this movie before and aren't already ahead of it. And then they cram everything that might be interesting into the, like, last third.
Yeah, that's true. It reminds me of Drive Angry in a way, where it was like, the characters are gonna be in a state of mystery, but like it's pretty obvious what's going on. Like they should like, just say
we get it. He's a Hellman.
Yeah, he's a Hellman. Here, this guy's an alien kid. Well, what's weird is that he tells you in the opening narration, "I'm an alien."
Yeah.
But then they withhold like, what? Why does he have powers? Like, what do the aliens do? You never find out.
Why do the other bad aliens hate him?
You never find out why the bad aliens are specifically after him. You never find out where he came. Like, they name
his
own
protector. He's like, he's got the power to like,
and he's all over the Facebook, man.
He is all over the Facebook and the YouTube.
It's not worth debating further.
So
I'm moving us on.
Wow,
half a wormy boner.
McCoy has spoken.
So. We have some letters here. As we
Elliot's favorite time of the night.
My favorite time of the night. Letter time. Let's read some letters and talk about them. Getting in touch with the fans. What do they think? Letters, letters, letters.
So
let's read some letters tonight.
See, you worked
tonight's
up.
The night for letters. Let's get some letters and read them.
Okay.
Read them and weep with laughter. Letters.
We have to
talking about letters.
We have to cut that theme down. That is,
yeah.
It's only now one tenth of
now
it.
Now that I hear it on the show, it seems much longer.
There's
I mean,
nine
it was
more
significantly
verses.
Longer before. Yeah. We've been working on that for
letters
a couple
of weeks. Letters and letters and letters
and letters.
You
get the idea.
No numbers here, just letters.
So first off,
letters.
This is just a donation.
What?
I want to say thank you for a donation. And the donors to us.
No, I mean, who was the donor?
Well,
who's getting the thank you?
He says, "My donation to the Flophouse is officially from the Eric Marcizak and his future wife Foundation."
Oh, that's very nice.
Thank you, star of Sandman.
Yes, yep. That is Eric Marcizak, the star of the movie Sandman, which I highly recommend.
If you want to see it on Netflix? It's S. Man.
It's a really good movie.
So.
So we had a real Hollywood star donate money to us. That's really nice.
So other Hollywood stars, Nicolas Cage. I think it's time to start opening up those wallets.
Come on, Nicolas Cage. Liquidate one of your German castles and
sell
give the money
castle.
To us.
Yeah. Give us the money.
We're keeping your career alive.
So this email is from Kurt, last name withheld. And he says,
It's Kurt Loder.
Possibly. I started listening to the Flophouse a few days ago and have been enjoying it very much. I wanted to pick up on a remark Elliot made on the Drive Angry in 3D Rated R podcast. In a tangent about Muppets Tonight, Elliot said that Clifford was a, quote, Rastafarian baboon. I believe that Clifford, if he's intended to be any animal, is alleged to be a catfish. And he has a link to a Wikipedia page about Clifford the Muppet.
A catfish?
Mm-hmm. And I have to say, I looked at the photo of Clifford, and he does appear to have catfish whiskers.
I always assumed that was a mustache.
Yeah. Well, it plays both ways.
So I guess I'm the real racist here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I apologize, the late Jim Henson and his production company.
Well, you're the racist one, right?
No, yeah, Dan was the racist one.
No, I thought Dan was the homophobic one.
Oh, that's right.
And I'm the party animal.
Wait a second.
Wait, why do you get that?
Your characterization is so much more lovable than ours.
That's the thing, though.
You bestow these made-up negative qualities on us. And
well, sometimes my partying gets out of hand.
Okay.
But not sometimes to the point that it's a real problem.
I don't understand. One's a homophobe, one's a racist, and the other's a party animal. Yeah. Not seem fair. That's unbalanced.
Well...
Okay. Well, Kurt goes on to say, incidentally, I haven't gone through your catalog completely, but I've noticed that most of the titles you've talked about have been more or less major movie releases.
Yes.
Have you spent much time on such new cult films as The Room, Birdemic, Shock and Terror, and other films so bad they're essentially unreleasable? No, we have not. We've gone through this
before.
I mean,
personal time.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've spent a lot of personal time. We've wasted
them.
A lot of time.
I mean, I've seen Birdemic, I think, three times. Done... And most of the movies are shots
room,
of people driving.
Three times.
The Room I've seen any, I don't know how many times. But I feel like those movies are kind of taken care of.
Yeah. And also...
There's other places for that.
Yeah. We'll let the how did this get made's of the world.
It is also like kicking a lame dog, say. To,
why would you
take
do
on
that?
Those. Well, you're not lame. The dog is lame.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, everyone kind of knows they're bad and why they're bad. And, you know, we'll take on the people who earn enough money that we hate them
yeah,
for making these crappy movies.
The true villains.
Because say what you will about Tommy Wiseau, he has not seen a penny from the room.
Yeah.
And probably never will.
Well, he's also a real auteur.
Yes, he's a real auteur, yeah.
And we actually...
He's a realtor.
We would actually probably enjoy watching those types of movies as opposed to the ones we find ourselves watching.
Oh, yeah. I'd much rather watch The Room or Birdemic Shock and Terror than I Am Number 4.
Yeah.
Or The Roommate.
Yeah.
Oof. Or what was the one where it was in...
Gooby?
And I didn't see Gooby. I missed it.
10,000 B.C.?
10,000 B.C. was the worst.
With the spear tooths?
But Whiteout, that was what I was thinking of. That was the worst. Okay. Spear tooths and the Mannix in 10,000 B.C.? Everyone's going to speak normal English, except we're going to change what people call mammoths. They can call them Mannix. Now you feel like you're in a far-off ancient wonderland.
Now you feel like you're watching a cop show. Mannix.
What?
Yeah, it's
a show called Mannix.
It's for old people.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'll make more Alicia Keys references for you.
So this is titled My Favorite New Bad Movie Podcast, and it says, Dear Paul, I've been following your career for a long time, from UCB to Human Giant.
Wait a minute.
And let me tell you, I think this is my favorite project of yours, your Bad Movie Podcast. I've scoured the web up and down like a spider, and I can't seem to find any other bad movie podcasts, which makes what you're doing truly unique. Add to the mix your wife and Jason Mantzoukas, and along with your A-list comedy guests, that's a recipe for a humorous souffle, one which can never collapse. If any other bad movie podcasts actually do exist, and I highly doubt it, I can't imagine they would be as entertaining as yours. I've enclosed a self-addressed stamped envelope. If you could please send me a Season 1 DVD set of Human Giant, signed by the cast, it would be appreciated. Thanks much. And that's from Andy, last name withheld. So...
I think that went to the wrong place.
They've clearly...
Who's Paul?
Either we've got a modern-day Jonathan Swift on our hands writing some set here, or else that email somehow went through the wrong email address chain.
The wrong tube.
The wrong tube. Oh, they must have just written Bad Movie Podcast on the envelope, and it got sent to us.
Yeah.
The same way how in, like, 1904 you could just draw a picture of glasses and teeth on an envelope, and it would get sent to Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah. And teeth, eh?
He had a big smile.
Okay. So
we got more letters.
We do.
What other letters for Paul Scheer do we have to answer?
Dig deep into that mailbag, man.
We have one more. We have one last letter. It says
letter of the letter segment. Last letter of the night.
I don't know why I agreed to let him sing a song at this point.
Savor that last letter.
I mean, he's been working on it a long time.
Last on
like
and
really
on
interrupts
the last letter. Last letter.
Well, no, I mean that's part of it. Is the
no
flow,
more
like
letters
flows.
After this one?
It doesn't it?
No more
it
letters
brings
till the next pod show. Letters for none. Letters for all. Last letter tonight.
So this says Dan and the rest of the Peaches.
Don't let it go. That last letter.
See, you
hold
he was
it to
done
your
second.
Heart.
Dan,
love it forever. The last letter. Don't go apart. Last letter. Okay.
We have lost all of our new listeners.
Yes.
Or, no, we've gained like 1,000 new listeners. The words.
Kids like Glee, dude.
Yeah.
Those fucking Glee kids are going to listen to that shit.
Gleeks are going to love that. Somebody just poked their head in and said, congratulations, you just recorded your first number one hit. It was your
cat.
He
had sunglasses on. Yeah. That means he's cool.
Or blind.
But same thing.
Yeah, kids love interruptions.
That's, last letter.
It says Dan.
Yeah, kids hate interruptions.
Dan and the
that's all they do.
For God's sake.
Their little phones and sticker books.
And their shoes with the lights on them and the wheels.
Okay, so there's no more letters, guys.
No,
that's,
don't read those letters. No come more. On, Dan, I'm sorry.
Candy cigarettes.
Did you say stickers?
Yes.
Dan and the rest of the Peaches, which, by the way, is the correct way to refer to Elliot and Stuart. The
yep.
rest
the original podcast title.
I'm the only one who deserves my actual name to be used.
Because you're not a peach.
Just discovered
you are a moldy pear.
The podcast through the AV Club's write-up.
Yes.
Thank
I
burned you.
Through most of the back catalog and eagerly await new episodes. Since you
glad
guys
you're
are
enjoying it.
Since you guys are the arbiters of what's spookily bad or 1.5 boners...
Wormy boners.
I
correct you, Millie.
Yeah, those were never good boners.
I wanted you guys to help settle an argument I've had with a friend. My friend argues there are no movies that are, quote, bad, and that any evaluation of a movie is based on arbitrary beliefs and unique life experiences of the viewer. He argues that even a movie's poor technical quality can't make a movie bad. because some people prefer poor production values as a type of art. I disagree and believe that some art, whether it's movies, books, or music, can be better than other art. Without sounding too snobby, there are some objective truths that Shakespeare taps into that have kept it around for 400 years, while other works have fallen away. His argument is more logical, and it's hard for me to argue my points, but it just doesn't feel right to say 10,000 BC is as good as a Coen Brothers movie. Anyway, I'd be happy to hear your thoughts.
It's as good as, like, the Lady Killers.
Intolerable
Cruelty.
Manny wasn't there.
No, that's a great movie. Anyway, Dan, if you would finish the letter, please.
But even if you don't get around to it, thanks for the podcast. Keep up the good work. Mike, last name withheld.
Well, thanks for starting to listen to the show, Mike, and we're glad you're enjoying it so much. And you are right.
Tell that song. Yeah.
But that, when that song came on, Mike was probably like, this is the best podcast I've ever heard. This is my ringtone now.
Wait, what's a ringtone?
I might actually put that
in my
ringtone.
I'm just joking.
Are you a young
that.
Person or an old person? I can never figure it out.
I mix it up.
So every time I get a call from Elliot, I will hear that irritating
last
song.
Letter tonight. Pick up the phone.
I think that there was a – Roger Ebert had a quote. I can't remember the specific, but I think he was talking
– He said, thumbs down.
Yep. I can't remember what he was saying it about, but
– He said something like, I'm not going to review Human Centipede.
There was, I think it was that movie, what's the movie that was a gangster film that had Sean
Goodfellas.
Connery and Matthew Broderick
in it? The Untouchables.
No.
Sean Connery and Matthew Broderick?
Yeah, I think it was like Career Opportunities or something like that, or not. No, that's a...
That's a what? Clash song.
It's a comedy. I can't remember, Family Business or something like that. There was a terrible... gangster film that clearly has lived through time because I can't even remember the name of it. But there was a reviewer who said that it was better than The Godfather. And Roger Ebert said to him, sometimes matters of opinion shade over into errors of fact. And I think that that's true.
Very nice.
There are some things that are objectively better. And it doesn't, you know, like, obviously personal preference can come into it. There are movies that I recognize are good movies, while still not particularly enjoying them.
Yeah.
And you can have both feelings in your head at the same time if you're not an idiot like your friend.
Wow.
Wow.
I've turned on them.
Okay, I'll take over from here. yes, there are some movies that are just bad. And there are movies that people like a lot that are not very good. And it doesn't mean that they're good. I used to have this very same argument a lot with my college roommate. Late in the night when Star Trek Voyager was over and there was nothing to talk about except subjective versus objective experience. And I always came down on the side of there are some standards that you can judge by. Not everything is subjective.
Voyager was the one with Odo on it, right?
No, that was it? I don't remember.
No, that was Deep Star 6.
It was Deep Star 6. Yeah. Voyager was the one with Lady Captain Janeway.
Okay.
And,
Star 6.
And they would voyage a lot.
Okay.
But, I think your friend is wrong. It's hard to disprove it, but you can say that I don't think there's anyone who's like, I like movies that are made bad because they tell me they're more truthful. The people who say people who like bad movies usually like to laugh at them. Even if they say there's something realer about them, they're still laughing at them in a way.
Or they enjoy not having themselves taxed, which is not always a bad
thing. Well, that's not the same as a poorly produced movie and a dumb movie are not the same thing necessarily.
But I think that it enters into the same conversation. You know, like a bad movie like I Am Number 4, which
no one likes,
is aggressively mediocre. Like I could see someone, like a kid enjoying it just because it hits.
Because it was just like bright colors and lights.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's got his baseball cap on backwards. And
but that kid is wrong.
Okay.
And should be punished.
So he should turn the hat around? Or?
Yep, to protect his face from the shame.
That's what a baseball cap's for.
For blocking out shame?
Okay. Baseball shame cap rays. Is for telling people what team you like.
For blocking out UV shame rays. They can give you shame cancer.
Nope. Okay, this is straight into
this has been a not very satisfying answer to your question. But I think you're right. What do you think, Stuart?
Personally, if somebody started making that argument with me, I would laugh and then try and change the subject. So
Stuart is pleasant luck. And conflict averse.
Yeah, that's
true. Well, I just think that's a stupid argument, and that's a type of argument that somebody would have with me that I wouldn't want to be involved in. So I'd start talking about favorite X-Men character.
You'd say, whatever, dude.
Or, wasn't that a great episode when Alf had to help deliver that baby in the elevator?
I thought, no, you think of Zach Morris.
No, I thought it was Alf.
Maybe they both did it at the same time. Oh, crossover.
It was the same
person.
So
who are your favorite X-Men characters? I assume Lila Cheney, the intergalactic rock star.
Absolutely.
Mojo.
Yep, Mojo. And Forge, the guy who can invent anything.
The guy whose mutant superpower is that he's a good inventor.
He's also a shaman.
He has the same,
you're objectively wrong.
He has the same mutant power as Thomas Edison.
Except and it's wasted on fixing the Blackbird all the time. So, comics talk.
You're listening to Comics Talk, the comics podcast disguised as a bad movie podcast.
The most complicated Trojan horse podcast out there.
So thanks for all the letters, guys.
Yeah, thanks for all the letters.
It. Let's hope you're still listening after this awesome episode. What else do we do now?
Well,
it hasn't been one of our huge triumphs, but...
It's okay.
For anyone who's just coming off the AV Club, and this is your first episode...
Are we supposed to feel bad about ourselves?
Let them make their own decisions about it. Let's not sell ourselves out.
You can cut this part out.
But not the song. Leave the song. Don't edit the song.
The song you should extend. Loop it. Loop the song. Look.
Throw in a beat.
I'll do a couple more verses.
I'll just loop the song under the whole podcast.
That's great. Just or and erase our voices. Just keep the song. Do a movie minute that's actually 30 minutes of just the song.
Okay.
It'll be bigger than Ziggy.
All right. So, Stuart, you're asking what we do now?
Yeah, what's next?
You are a very forgetful person.
Sure.
You forget the segments of the podcast every
time we record.
Even
though you've done almost 100 of them now.
So now do we talk about movies we actually like?
More than 100?
Holy shit.
Perfect.
Holy shit.
In a summer filled with hot superhero movies, the movie I want to recommend is Sam Raimi's Darkman, which I just recently rewatched, and it's really awesome. And
Darkman Die? Or,
no, not that one.
Or not The Return of Durant?
No, not that one. The first one.
Okay.
Last Tango in Darkman.
The thing that's great about it is that I haven't seen it since I've seen the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies. And it's funny to see how much the style of Spider-Man comes from Darkman. I mean, obviously you can see the Evil Dead influence,
sure.
But like there's many scenes that are almost shot for shot from like the Spider-Man stuff.
Well, like when Darkman fought Dr. Octopus.
Yes, that scene specifically. So if you're out there, it's on HBO On Demand right now. Watch Darkman. It rules. How was that? Was that a good? That was a recommendation. I didn't even talk about
Invisible
Man.
That
was
drool.
I'm just so happy to hear you recommend a movie you've never recommended before. Because every every podcast I go out of my way to pick a movie I haven't recommended before.
Yeah.
But you have the same three that you usually go to.
I don't watch that many movies. Mainly Head of the Family, Castle Freak, and Invisible Maniac.
Dan.
Well, I haven't seen a lot of movies, but I did purchase a number of Mill Creek Entertainment DVD collections. I purchased four collections of 12 movies each. Mill Creek Entertainment
sounds
has
good.
Bought the Crown International Film Library. And there's a lot of people out there who are notably folks like Quentin Tarantino who are really into sort of like the grindhouse exploitation films. And I've always found a lot of those movies to be more pleasurable to read about than actually watch, because even though there's some amazing things you can find in them, they're often draggy and terrible otherwise. But the two that I have watched already off of the Mill Creek collections, I've enjoyed. One was on the Cult Cinema Favorites, and one was off of the Bombshells collection. And those were Death Row Game Show and Police Women. And Death Row Game Show is sort of a Running Man style, you know, like convicts on death row and a game show scenario. But it was much more low, you know, it's like an actual game show, just like people in the soundstage doing stupid game show shit, including one thing was Dance of the Seven Boners, where a woman comes out and strips. And if the electrodes attached to the man's penis move, he gets electrocuted. And
this movie was shown to children.
No.
They showed this in schools.
No, it was an R-rated comedy. It was a dark comedy, kind of like a Paul Bartel style film. It drags a little in the middle, but it's fun. And Police Women is also kind of draggy at parts, but the opening in particular is actually a really nice low budget jailbreak sequence with some ridiculous high kicking police woman karate in it. So those were both fun.
I will recommend an older film.
Sure. For a change.
For a change, I'll recommend an old movie. This one is called Gertie the Dinosaur, and it is – no, it's not.
It's called The Train Robbery.
The Great Train Robbery. The Train Robbery is the one people don't really remember. The Great Train Robbery was the really good one.
Okay.
Anywho, so
– a lot of dead air.
Oh, boy.
You're recommending Baby the Lost Dinosaur, right?
Yeah, it's called the Jazz Singer.
It's called Baby the Legend of the Lost Dinosaur. It's called Super Mario Brothers the Movie. A movie that I'm a big Alfred Hitchcock fan, and one of his that I've been avoiding, I guess, for a long time was Young and Innocent, because it doesn't have the best reputation, and it didn't seem that exciting. But I finally saw it recently, and it's actually a really fun, very small scale Hitchcock crime movie. You know, the wrong guy is accused of a crime, and he's on the run, and he has to prove his innocence, and there's a girl that comes along with him for the ride. And it's all very light and kind of silly. It never feels that dangerous, and it never feels that suspenseful, frankly. Mm-hmm. But it's always fun, and there's a lot of very funny moments of just like, you know, hip, hip, I'm an English character, and I'm going to interact with another character like this. What, governor? And things like that. And it's actually a lot of fun, and I would highly recommend it. It's a good movie to watch just as like a just like a surprise, just as a treat, just as a surprise. Say you come home from work, you're tired, you don't have it in you to watch The Tree of Life.
Sure.
So you watch Young and Innocent.
I've had that on my Netflix queue for a long time because it's on the instant view, and I've been avoiding it too just because, you know, it doesn't have a great reputation. But now you've sold me.
It's very fun, and there's a lot of neat shots and moments in it. It's a movie that if it came out now, people would think it was great. But just like Dark Man. But compared to Hitchcock's other movies, it's just not as good. But it's a lot of fun. And there's the villain at the end is performing in blackface as part of his job, and it's almost like it makes the villain that much eviler because he's a racist.
Just like Elliot.
Yep.
No, I'm not. Don't understand how Stuart cut off with just being a party animal.
it's my cross to bear, to be honest with you.
So I think we're winding down. I think you're going to hear in our voices.
We did it, guys.
We made it. This is just like the end of a marathon. Our bodies are shutting down.
At last, the nightmare is over.
Yep. Nipples bleeding.
We want to be able to turn the air conditioner back on.
We just got
to
wrap ourselves in one of those silver blankets they give you at the finish line.
Yeah. Have a banana.
Is that what you do after
passing a banana?
Oh, I thought because your body's so tired, it's devolving into chimp form. That too. Banana's the only things that you want to eat at the time.
All right. Well, on that note, I'd like to say goodnight. I've been Dan McCoy.
I've been Stuart Wellington.
And I am a very tired Elliot Kalin.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Another song. Keep it
from
up.
From the Flop House. Good night, everybody. Good night.
Kids
from
fucking
the
like
house.
Lee, man. That's what I'm
More
saying.
Letters next time.
I see you as a distant. A distant parent.
Distant. Yeah. Well. Yeah. Well. When the Flop House gets in the way, certainly.
That's the thing. They'll understand.
They'll understand when
they'll understand.
Get older.
It's like King Tut's kids were like, "Holy shit! He was building all kinds
King
of pyramids.
Tut didn't have any kids. He died young.
No, but he built all kinds of pyramids,
he didn't.
Right? No, like with he had his army of mummies and shit built.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Kids were like, he's spending all his time with the mummies. King Tut's kids would wrap themselves in toilet paper to look like mummies. Do you like me now, Dad?
He's like, no, you're like a stinking Yeti.